That's a way to get the attention of everybody. All right, I just asked Corey how he rested. He says he sleeps. You will die without sleep. So I think that's a proper way to find some rest. All right, you're getting called out because you were yawning right then. So how do you rest, Chloe?
Yeah, taking a nap after I race.
Taking a nap after you race. You had a cross-country race today. You got a PR. Way to go, Chloe. Let's see. Over here, you guys, how do you rest? Matt, how do you rest?
Watch Netflix.
You watch Netflix, okay. We might have to talk about that a little bit later, so we'll see. Netflix. All right, you guys, how do you rest?
Read.
Swim.
When my wife goes to the pool.
When your wife goes to the pool, Bruce finds rest. All right. And I like that you said something that was actually exercise is how you rest, because that is a non-traditional way of thinking of rest. That's good. That's good. Let's take a couple more. All right, you guys over here, how do y'all rest? Read. Listen to music. Me too. Me too. Or play music, whichever. Struggle to play music, but yeah, play music. Lori, how do you rest?
I like to go to the beach or pool.
Amen. Beach or pool, for sure. All right, I'll do two more. This table. Nap. Oh, gosh. Nap and TV. One. Fight. What? Oh, at the dojo. Okay, you get out your anger and exhaustion on him. All right. And then I'm going to come over here. And how do you rest? Nap was? You're a lot of nappers. Who's my sleepers in the room? Who just likes to sleep? I know my wife's raising her hand over here. It's funny. I talked about rest. It was the very first sermon I gave at Refuge a little over 2.5 years ago. And at that time, I made a little joke about my wife's sleeping habits. And I said she can fall asleep anywhere, anytime, super fast. I'll be in conversation with her, and she'll fall asleep in the middle of conversation, which is super encouraging in a relationship. And kind of like you guys do when I preach every week, so kind of the same thing. But she's a sleeper. I'm not. When I go to bed, at the time, 2 years ago, it was more like a theory, like an idea. Like, I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to try to go to sleep, maybe, and we'll see what happens there. But a lot of things change in 2 years. We've changed as a church. We've grown as a church. I now fall asleep relatively easy. In fact, Karen finds me more often than not now saying, hey, do you want to go to bed? I'm tired, so I'm the one. So if you think you can't change and learn how to rest, how to sleep, it is possible. We all can change. We're working our way through the book of Genesis, and I've gotten sidetracked here for the last 2 weeks and wanted to stay around chapters 1, 2, and 3 a little bit longer and just talk about work and talk about rest. And so if you missed last week, we talked about work last week. Normally I'd say you can go online and listen to that message, but it did not get recorded for whatever reason, so you can't do that. So let me just give you a quick highlight of last week. We talked about work, that work was there in the beginning. At the beginning of Genesis, God worked, which makes work then inherently good. And we said, as believers, we don't need to constantly be searching for a calling or what God's calling is for our lives. We can glorify God where we're planted today, and that includes where we work. We can glorify God in our work. And then lastly, we ended last week saying that work is not a curse, as some people believe that it is because of Genesis 3, but because of the fall, our work is cursed. And so because of sin, now our work is hard, it's exhausting, and it can be frustrating. As I mentioned, the very first sermon I gave here, we had our opening weekend 2 years ago in August, and it was a celebration, a big party, and friends and family and everything here, and it was just kind of a fun night. And then the next week, I had to give the first official sermon of Refuge, and I thought long and hard about what we were going to talk about, and I chose the topic of rest, because I knew, starting as a church, if we did not rest, we would end out a bunch of burned out, tired, exhausted, bitter people, which sounds the complete opposite of what a refuge would be. And so we want to be a church that rests, and I think after 2.5 years, it's a good time to talk a little bit more about being a resting church again. I was driving home last night from Tampa. We went up to go to IKEA, take our kids shopping there. They'd never been before. It's like the Disney World of shopping, I think one of them said. So we took them up to IKEA last night. We went out to a great dinner, and then we're driving home trying to figure out what to listen to. Flipped on a little Chris Cornell, because I'm thinking of you, Aaron, and thinking, man, I haven't listened to that last album in a bit. And there's a line that he sings. Chris is an amazing singer, passed away from a suicide, but amazing singer. He's got a line that says, time ain't nothing if it ain't fast. That's true, right? We've experienced that a little bit, that time flies. And then we let it slip away a little bit faster and a little bit faster because we don't take control of our time. We allow our time to control us. So I want to do a quick little experiment. It's never been tested before, so you're going to be the first to ever try this experiment. I want you all to close your eyes. Nobody's going to steal your purse or your wallet, I don't think, maybe. Close your eyes right now. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to say count to 10. And I want you to count to 10 seconds. And then when you get to 10, one clap. Okay, so I'm going to tell you when to go. You get to 10, one clap. So ready, set, go. And I'm just there now. Holy smokes. Y'all have no idea. You just clapping, Wayne? Or are you just clapping for the fun of it? Some of you were like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I don't even know how you counted to, you knew I meant like 10 seconds, right? Count to 10 seconds. We think we have a handle of our time, and we don't even have a handle of how long 10 seconds of time is. Time has never been easier to waste than it is today. I heard that Instagram went down for an hour this week. Anybody knew that? Did you know that Instagram went down for 1 hour this week? I'm proud of you guys for not knowing that. I heard one late-night comedian, I didn't know either, but a late-night comedian, he said for an entire hour the Kardashians didn't exist because Instagram had gone out. Down. We're not very good managers of our time. We're always busy, 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 but we're not always productive. We're always tired, but we don't plan the proper time to take rest. See, in America, we've bought into this lie that being busy is a badge of honor. It's not that way in every culture. In China, in their language, they have a word for busy, and it's actually two words. And the two words mean heart and killing. Being busy is heart killing. And so if we can't slow down when we're too busy, Chinese at least say it kills the heart. And we can think of that literally. If you don't slow down, heart attack's going to slow you down real quick. Or it can be spiritually. It's an empty soul. Our heart is our inner soul. So tonight I'm going to have two parts to this message. First is just going to do the theology of rest, so we understand the biblical precedence of rest and its mandates. And then the second half, do something a little different. I'm going to just get super practical, and I don't do a lot of steps and how-tos, but I think this week we need to talk a little bit, well, if the Bible says we're supposed to rest, then how do we practice and rest? And so we'll start with a little bit of the theology of rest. There's a synergistic relationship between work and rest. We all know this on some level. A lot of you said you had to nap because if you work and never rest, eventually you're going to die. So we talked about last week, we can work in high doses. It's one of the only things in life that in high doses we can take work, but it doesn't mean we can only work. We do still have to stop and rest. In fact, resting will allow us to turn to work and do a lot more and be a lot more productive and do a lot better. This past summer, you guys know I went to Hawaii for a month of rest, and I needed to do that, and by the end, I did finally feel rested. Now, I work hard, and I work a lot of jobs, and so it takes me just about a week of vacation just to get into rest mode, to stop thinking about work. But by the end of that vacation, 28 days in Hawaii, I'd actually gotten tired of rest. I was refreshed, I was recharged, but I was ready to go back to work. And what happened is when I went back to work, I found myself way more productive and for here, way more creative. I don't know if you noticed or not, I think my messages have been a little better the last couple of months than they were before I went on vacation. And so I think I needed that rest to recover and be more productive and creative. Now, I looked up some studies this week about rest. It says people who rest have more purpose, more clarity, they're more creative, they make better decisions, they prioritize better, they're more honest, they're less stressed, they value relationships more, they're humbler, they're gentler, they're more genuine, and they're more productive, and thus God-honoring in their work. God created time. Created everything. And so God has complete control over time. I think we can agree to that. And yet within the time that he created, he took time to rest. Genesis chapter 1, you guys know this, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so we said the Bible starts, page 1, with God working. And he creates, and he makes light, and he makes darkness, and he makes the waters, and he makes the penguins, and he makes the petunias, and he makes the people. And on the sixth day, it says, then God blessed the people and said, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish in the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground. And so God creates humanity in his image, and he instructs us to work. And then verse 31 says, then God looked over all he had made, and he saw that it was very good. And evening passed, and morning came, marking the sixth day. We turn the page to Genesis chapter 2, verse 1, and it starts like this. So the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was completed. A lot of people believe that right there is where God finished creation. I want to look at verse 2. It says, on the seventh day, then, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy because it was the day when he rested from all his creation. And so God completes creation on the sixth day, but it wasn't finished until day seven when he rested. God's work wasn't finished until he rested. That's an interesting concept, that the all-powerful, all-knowing creator God stops to rest. That's interesting, right? Is he tired? Has he got some divine fatigue? Whew, man, that first week, those stars and those birds, and then I made those humans. I'm exhausted. Or is it that God rests not because he's tired, but because he's satisfied? He rests to marvel at his work. And so he takes an entire day dedicated to contentment and to joy. I used to lead mission trips down to the Dominican Republic two or three times a year. And when we got there, we usually went from Tuesday to Tuesday. That was our work schedule. We went down to build buildings and paint houses and throw rocks and all kinds of crazy hard labor type stuff. And so we went Tuesday to Tuesday. And so you'd fly in on Tuesday. You'd get there Tuesday night. You'd be tired from travel. They'd check you in. They'd tell you all the rules. Don't flush the toilet paper and all that kind of crazy stuff. It'd be hot and humid. The power would kick off and on two or three times. And then you would go to bed in these little bitty bunk beds, but you got up the next morning gung-ho, excited, and ready to work. That was the schedule, and that's how they set it up. And you would work Wednesday through Saturday just crazy hard, 10 to 12 hours a day with a little siesta in the middle, and by Saturday night you were exhausted and tired, but that's good because the next day was Sunday. And on Sunday they allowed us to go to church with the Dominicans. We didn't know what was saying, but we got to rest while we were there and recover a little bit on Sunday and go to the beach on Monday. Well, on one of these trips, instead of it being Tuesday to Tuesday, we went Saturday to Saturday because there were some scheduling conflicts. And we get there, go through the same routine. It's dark. The power's out. We go to bed. We're ready to work. We're gung-ho. And we wake up the next morning on our very first day in the Dominican Republic, ready to work. And it's a day of rest. It's Sunday. And all we got to do that day was go to church and rest on our first day of a mission trip. Day six, God makes Adam and Eve. And he tells them, be fruitful and multiply. He's drawing them into his work. And they go to bed on that first day, and they wake up the next day. What day is it when they wake up? It's day seven. Adam and Eve are created. First day of existence. They're ready to go to work, and they wake up, and it's a day of rest. First day on the job, God causes them to rest. No agenda, no goals, no work, just rest, showing them the importance of rest. And so God gives us the gift of rest. Later in the Old Testament, though, we're not doing a good job with that, so God makes a top 10 list of commands. And there's this rest command on there, and yet we flippantly ignore that commandment. Anybody seen Pirates of the Caribbean? The first one, the only good one, and the pirate Barbossa, they're talking about the pirate code. And what's he say? They say, they aren't so much rules, they're more of a guideline. When we read the Ten Commandments, we're like, well, those other nine are rules, but the Sabbath one, that's more of a guideline. You know, I know that thing God says about murdering people, could you imagine if we treated that as a guideline? It'd be good if you don't do that, but it's just a general guideline, no big deal. Don't steal, but if you can't, but it's okay if you get too busy and you end up having to steal. But we don't say that. Yet we get to the commandment of Sabbath, and we treat it as a recommendation instead of a commandment from God. We find the Ten Commandments two places in Scripture. We find it first in Exodus chapter 20. The Israelites have just been saved. They just came out of slavery in Egypt. They just walked through the Red Sea that Moses parted. They're there at the Mount Sinai. And for the first time ever, they receive these rules, these laws, these commands of God. And so it starts, law number one, have no other God before me. Commandment number two, don't misuse my name. Number three, Exodus 20 verse 8 says, remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. Sabbath is just a verb. It comes from a verb that means to stop or to cease. And so God says to what the Sabbath? What's the word? It says to remember the Sabbath. He's pointing them back to that creation story that we just read. Verse 9, he says, you have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. For in 6 days, the Lord made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and everything in them. But on the seventh day, he rested. That is why the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and set it apart as holy. So God is saying, you remember that story. You remember how I rested after 6 days? You remember how I made Adam and Eve rest on that first day? You remember how I gave you rest as a gift? Later on in Deuteronomy chapter 5, we get the Ten Commandments again. It's called the second law. That's what Deuteronomy means. But Israel has now wandered the desert for 40 years. An entire generation since the last one has died off. And finally, they're on the cusp, though, to go into the promised land. They're going to become a sovereign nation, the most free they've ever been. And God's about to allow them to enter. But instead, he gives them the second law just to confirm his commands. And so Deuteronomy chapter 5 begins, observe. Last time, remember, it was remember. But now this time he says, observe the Sabbath, to preserve it, to guard it, to protect the Sabbath day by keeping it holy as the Lord your God has commanded. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work. And then he gives them the reason they need to protect, they need to observe this day. Verse 15, he says, remember, now he's using remember again, that you were once slaves in Egypt, but the Lord your God brought you out with his strong hand and powerful arm. That is why the Lord your God has commanded you to rest on the Sabbath day. Now, God is mysterious, and we don't often know all his ways and the whys and the hows, but here he's giving us a little insight on one of the reasons behind rest, that Sabbath, resting, is an act of protest, and it's an act of resistance to slavery. God says, remember that day when you had no freedom? Remember when you were slaves of Pharaoh? Remember when you had no option to rest? Remember when Pharaoh constantly demanded a load of brick after brick after brick? But now you're free. And so rest. Rest as a sign of protest. Rest as a proclamation of your freedom. Don't become slaves again to that little Pharaoh that still lives in your heart, that is still demanding you to make brick after brick after brick. Well, I hope you've crossed the lines there and you see the beauty of the gospel within the Sabbath. I hope you could hear Jesus saying, you were once slaves, slaves to the law, to your sin, trying to work out your salvation, but now you're free. I brought you out of your slavery at a great cost. And so rest. Rest as a proclamation of your new freedom. Rest as a protest to never again go under the yoke of slavery to that little Pharaoh who lives in your heart or that little Pharisee that lives in your heart. That's some theology behind resting. And so I hope you believe now that resting is important, it's biblical, and it was deemed by God. But how do we practice that theology? And so I'm going to take the rest of the message and say, how do we rest? How do we practice rest? Sports people, how do you get good at a sport? You practice. Music people, how do you get good at music? You usually got to practice. So for spiritual disciplines, whether it's prayer or worship or studying the Bible or learning how to Sabbath, that same holds true. When you practice, it builds strength. When you practice, it prepares you for a game. When you practice, it grows endurance. When you practice, it creates muscle memory. You've heard that phrase before, right? Muscle memory. Presley, my daughter, is she in here tonight? Yeah, there she is. $20 for you, coming off your debt later in the future. Presley started playing volleyball last year. It's middle school, and it's their first opportunity to play volleyball. And it's all the kids' first time playing because it's middle school. And it's our first time as parents going to a volleyball game. So we had to learn the rules a little bit, didn't know what they played to, didn't know how they kept score. Learned that they actually play three sets. And so it is kind of weird and awkward when your daughter, the first game, you're definitely rooting for their team. But if they lose that first game, by the second game, and you're hungry and you're ready to go home, you kind of start rooting. We don't ever root against our daughters. Yes, we do. I'll just be honest. This is church. But I see these kids, and they're out there, and they're trying to learn how to play volleyball, and it's the start of the season, and they don't have any muscle memory yet. They're just kind of flailing around. They're not very quick to react, and they get confused if it's bump or spike or set or whatever the other thing they're supposed to do, and they just don't have the muscle memory yet down. They know what they're supposed to do, but their muscles just haven't memorized those systems yet. But by the end of the season, and their season just ended this week, they're much quicker to react, and they've gotten much better, and they've developed this muscle memory. And so now they know how to hit the ball. They know how to get a serve over. And when things come at them, instead of not knowing bump, set, or spike, they know which one to do. It's almost become instinctual because of their muscle memory. And so can we practice rest to make it instinctual? Can we have rest muscle memory? Or can we at least try to fake it until we make it? I have a lot of back issues, a couple of back surgeries now, and partly due to bad genetics, partly due to just doing dumb stuff as a kid, and partly due to being high strung and a high tense person. But I get these giant knots in my back. And Beth, you're a massage therapist, right? I get these giant knots, you know, right there in your shoulder blade or whatever. And so I do go see a massage therapist from time to time, and I go in to see her, and she's working on me and digging that elbow into that knot. And then she tries to stretch me and starts moving my arms around, and she always says, she's like, you got to relax. You got to relax your body. And I'm just tense and I'm kind of fighting it and I'm not a good relaxer. Now, my wife, again, not so much. She's a good relaxer, and we once did a couples massage together, and I listen, and I hear her snoring while we're doing that. Needless to say, that was our first and last couples massage and might be our last night together after I just shared that story. She's shaking her head, yes. I have a hard time relaxing, and the more that therapist tells me to relax, I can't relax, and I start to tense up even more. But I finally learned to just start faking it. And so she says to relax, and I'm like, which way does she want my arm to go? And I just kind of move it where I think she's going to take my arm. And so I've been faking it the last few times I went. And the last time I went in, the massage therapist says, man, you really had a good session today. You finally learned to relax. Now, again, I don't know if I was just faking it or I did finally relax a little bit, but I think I will continue to fake it until I make it. And so tonight, I want to share a handful of techniques and ideas that maybe you can use to practice rest, or at least show you how to fake it until you eventually make it. So step number one, or idea number one, I guess we could say, put rest in your calendar. That's just as basic as we can get. Put rest in your calendar. God creates 6 days. He puts rest on the seventh day. Put rest in your calendar. Athletes get this concept of putting rest on their schedule very well. Michael Jordan, when he played basketball, would play 38 minutes per game, and then he would sit out 10 minutes a game of scheduled rest. He had that scheduled every day. And if you want to go a little more current, Steph Curry, he only spends 34 minutes on the court each game, and he spends 14 minutes resting on the bench. They understand this concept of needed and scheduled rest. Athletes also have an off season, and they schedule time to train, to compete, and time to rest. General Patton or Vince Lombardi, I'm not sure who this quote is attributed to because it's been attributed to both of them, but both of them have said this, that fatigue makes cowards of us all. I guess my slide's Vince Lombardi, so we'll go with that. Fatigue makes cowards of us all. We need to get some rest on our agenda before we reach the point of fatigue, because even the strongest amongst us can make really poor decisions about rest when we're already exhausted. That's why when you're dieting, meal prep is so important. If you've had a long day and you're at the end of the day and you're hangry and you know you didn't buy anything at home to eat, you have nothing prepped, you're weak, you're fatigued, and you go to Chili's and you eat the triple play. It's a true story. We did that this week. And it wasn't even good. And so we wasted all of our calories on a bad meal at Chili's. Same thing happens when we don't rest. We have a long week, we're tired. And instead of doing something to rest, to actually recharge and rejuvenate, we go after the Chili's of rest. We go after some junk rest. Now, I need to make a point. We all rest differently. We're all going to do different things in order to rest. For some of you, resting is a day on the golf course. That's incredibly relaxing. For me, not so much. I don't even see how that's a sport. Others here, some of you here tonight are extroverts. And so if you're an extrovert, rest is hosting a barbecue and having a bunch of friends and family over. If you're an introvert, sometimes you want nothing more to rest than a bit of solitude and peace and quiet. If you work outside all week, maybe it's getting indoors to rest. And if you work inside staring at a computer all week, maybe it's going outside to rest. We all rest differently. Some of you think that the magical hell that is Disney World is rest. And I have no idea that, I mean, I don't know how you get rest out of Disney World. It's crazy expensive. Kids crying everywhere. There's long lines. It always rains. Peter Pan's flight's always canceled. There's germs everywhere. The fast pass thing makes no sense because if everybody has it, it's not going to be fast. You usually spend the night in a hotel with your kids in the same room. That is not rest. In somebody else's bed, that is not rest. But y'all go right ahead and go to Disney World and take your rest. Who knows what this is? I don't ever use props, but who knows? What is this? It's a pillow. What kind of pillow is this? A throw pillow, a decorative pillow. Is this a pillow? Your pillow? My hick accent coming out. I knew y'all making fun of me back there. Is this pillow made for resting? Now, look, you single guys in the room, are all you guys single up here? I'm talking to you. So when you're dating and you're trying to determine if this is the woman of your dreams that you're going to marry, you got to work some stuff out, like where you want to live, how many kids you want to have, when you want to start having those kids. But I encourage you to ask the question, how many of these are we going to have on our beds? Because there are women that put 8 to 10 of these pillows on their bed. You know how many of them are meant for sleeping? 2. And so you have to work to take the thing that's supposed to be made for rest and take it off of your bed. And then you have to work and put it back on your bed and off the bed and on the bed. These are not meant for rest. My wife is awesome, though. We started, I think at one point, had 7 pillows on our bed. But she has become a minimalist like me, and we are down to 4 pillows today, 2 of them for rest. And we use the other 2 to actually prop our heads up to watch TV. So all 4 pillows have a purpose. There are many things that look like they are made for rest, but they aren't. Social media looks like a nice, comfy pillow to lay our heads on. And then we quickly lose track of time and wonder why we never feel rested, wonder why we never find any time to rest. Have you ever heard anybody say, "I feel so refreshed"? Oh, how? What's your secret? Oh, man, I spent my entire day scrolling through Facebook, looking at all my friends' great political insight. Rested. TV. TV can look like rest. Matt, I told you I was going to call you out a little bit back there, because it is for me, man. TV, I'm tired. I worked all day. I get on the couch. The kids have gone to get. I got my bowl of organic white cheddar Cheetos sitting up on my stomach, because that's where you sit it when you're watching TV. It's time to relax. And then 8 hours later, I binge watch. I don't feel rested. I feel like a sloth. And I'm still as tired as I was when I started. So don't confuse work for rest. So many examples I could come up with. Technology is a big one. Technology is useful for work. It's connecting with others. It's useful to Google how old Cher is. I don't know if you know this or not. We were Googling how old somebody was, and it was interesting who came up. We Googled how old is. Number 1 on the list was Cher. Number 2 was Vanna White. Number 3 was Tom Cruise. So apparently people are interested in this stuff. But I want to let you guys in on a little rest secret about technology. Airplane mode, that works even when you're not on an airplane. You can put your phone in airplane mode and you can eliminate the constant stimulation and distractions so that you can actually rest. Now, this is going to get a little sensitive. This is another work thing that looks a little bit like rest. What about politics? Ooh, I'm scared to even say that. Is that work or rest? My friend Aaron that played guitar with us tonight, I was texting a little bit with him thinking about this. I said, you know, is it work or rest? He said, I think that would fall into the category of idolatry, which I think that would be pretty accurate. Question about you who are into politics. Does that help you recharge or does that drain you even further? That'll help you determine if it's work or rest. I was at the gym two weeks ago, and I'm in the shower. Got one of these loud talkers in the stall next to me, talking to the guy in the stall next to him, and I hear them having this conversation about politics. And the one guy says, man, I need to hurry up and get home today. It's really important. I got to watch the Kavanaugh hearings. And the other guy's like, really? Really? You're going to do that? And he's like, yeah, man, I'm really into politics. What does that mean, that politics is his job? Like he's a congressman or he's really into it. He likes to research all points of view so he can understand the foundations of the parties and the movements and how they differ. Or does it mean that he likes to use up all of his mental capacity being upset and angry and outraged by something he gets one opportunity a year to vote on? Doesn't sound a lot like rest. What about, again, we're going to get sensitive here. What about the church? Is that rest? Or is it another decorative pillow that looks like rest, but feels a lot more like work? Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, Paul says, share each other's burdens, and in this way, obey the law of Christ. Well, if you're sharing the burden of another, that can definitely be work. I can attest to that. If you're having somebody else carry your burden, that can certainly feel a lot like rest. That's how God designed the church. Give rest, receive rest. But many churches, and sadly our own, even though I preached on rest that first week, I haven't done a good job of building that culture. We get so busy with activities and programming and all the stuff that makes up church, and it never, ever feels like rest. Or it never, ever feels like, in our case, a refuge. It's just another thing that keeps us busy, keeps heart killing. That's not the purpose of the church. And if we don't learn to practice rest as a church, I worry. I worry that we'll end up resentful and bitter instead of being rested so that we can come alongside others and carry their burden. Now, we've attempted to build that culture since the beginning. We've attempted to be mindful of rest. That's why I preached on it that very first week. Because I knew we wouldn't be a church that rests if we overloaded with programs and projects. That we wouldn't be a church that rests if we did not share the workload. That we wouldn't be a church that rests if we did not validate non-traditional ministry opportunities. In that first sermon, I went back and read it this week. I quoted Jen Hatmaker because I just read her book, For the Love. I haven't read it since then, but this quote still stands out and it still applies. She says, does an informal gathering of seven people discussing God bear less weight than a church service? If a family gives 2 hours on Tuesday, is that less meaningful than 2 hours on a Sunday? If a Christ follower spends hours engaging his searching friends over wine and hummus, we can't also expect 3 church programs to legitimize his investment. Ironically, the more responsibility people take for their spiritual development and their neighbor, the healthier they become. Also less resentful of the church, less dependent upon programming, and less reliant upon pastors. Now again, I need to do a better job holding to this idea as the lead pastor of this church. And so this week has been a really good reminder to refocus that we are a refuge, not a factory. And I count on you guys to hold me accountable. And I count on you not to get terribly offended if I start shutting down programs and activities, all the ones that you want to do. I was asked by somebody this week that's considering making Refuge their church home. We went out to coffee yesterday, I guess, on Friday. And he had a question. He says, why do you guys meet on Saturdays? I guess he thought maybe we were like Seventh-day Adventists or something like that. And I said, well, there's several reasons, really. One was, you know, so we can borrow band members that play at other churches on Sundays. They can come play with us on Saturday nights. One is we thought about Friday night, Saturday night seemed to seem better. But one of the big reasons and the main reason we chose Saturday night for our church service is so that we could encourage you to have a true day of Sabbath on Sunday. that day would be left completely open. No volunteering in children's ministry, none of this stuff. It would be a day of complete and total Sabbath for those of you who have had that day off. We were trying to create a culture of rest. One other thing we can do is we can take mini Sabbaths. I mean, we got to set realistic expectations. If you've never taken a Sabbath, maybe start with a little Sabbath. Maybe 3 hours would be more realistic. 3 hours with no phone, no people, no kids, just you and your thoughts. Blaise Pascal, he's French. He was a mathematician. He's a physicist. He's an inventor. He's a writer. He's a theologian. I don't know how he found time to rest, but he says this. All of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone. Well, you don't need much of a plan to sit quietly in a room alone. Some of these mini Sabbaths throughout the day, you can take. They can be 5 minutes, they can be 10 minutes, they can be 15 minutes. If you're the first one to a meeting and you show up to a restaurant, instead of pulling out your phone to endlessly look at Facebook, just sit there and be observant. Watch what's happening around you. If you're driving to work, turn off the radio. Sit in silence and just let your mind wander. Not too far, don't run into me, but let your mind wander. If you're at a stoplight, I read today, looked it up, I was curious, average stoplight's 2 minutes. Maybe you can start there by just not pulling out your phone at a stoplight for that 2 minutes and just rest a little bit.
Go when it turns green,
that's right, so I don't have to honk at you. Actually, I'm the guy doing that, so I'm mostly preaching to myself here tonight, Mike. Jim, you can put on some worship music, and so you're resting as you're exercising and working out. Take a 15-minute lunch break and walk, or you can spend 10 minutes at the end of your day when your kids are in bed and everything's done, and before you turn that TV on or after you turn that TV on, just sit down and reflect on the day that you just had and think about your day tomorrow. And think about where you saw God today and where you might see him tomorrow. One last thing, acknowledge the seasons. I touched on this just a little bit last week. Ecclesiastes says, of course, there's a season for every activity under heaven. I've told my wife, I've told several of my close friends recently that probably at this stage of life, in our mid-40s, we're in that busy season of life. We're in the prime of our careers. Our teenagers are in every imaginable sport. We have lots of relationships. And so we are in a busy season, and it's okay to have a busy season. We just eventually need those snowbirds to go home. And so if you've been proactive in your planning, you need to be especially proactive in your planning if you are in that season of life. You need to plan out those Sabbaths. That's why my family protects our Sundays extremely well, I think, and we don't see a lot of people. We don't do a lot of things. We just stay at home and we hang out with each other. Maybe you need to take extended vacations with your family. I want to talk about one other season that we touched on last week, and that's retirement. I think retirement is good. I mean, if we follow the standard of the Bible, 6 days of work and 1 day of rest can follow our lives. 60-some days of work and 10, 15, 20 years of rest, I think it can follow those same percentages. But in retirement, don't forget what we talked about last week as well, that work is still good. And work can still bring you a lot of satisfaction, and it can still glorify God. And so now is a really good opportunity to change your focus to working for an income, to finding alternative forms of work to glorify God. All right, two last really important ones here. One, make sure you rest in the Lord as you're resting, that while you rest, you remember that God gave you that freedom to have that rest. And lastly, trust God in your rest. And that's going to take the most practice of anything we've talked about. Most of us have FOMA. You guys know what FOMA is, right? Fear of missing out. And so we don't rest because we fear we're going to fall behind. We fear we're going to let other people down. We fear we're not going to get praise for the work that we're doing. We fear the work is just not going to get done if I don't do the work. This past Sunday, we took our Sabbath as a family, and we rested. And we rested by going outside and cleaning that ditch that I showed you that my kids needed to clean last week. And so rest for me is getting outside, sometimes getting my hands dirty. And Karen and the big girls came outside with me, and we started cleaning that ditch. And it's hard, and it's hot, and there's snakes everywhere in that ditch, and I hate snakes. And my youngest, she's 7, she comes out, and she wants to help. Emery, she says, I want to help. And we say, sure. She's not really all that helpful. And so We say, why don't you go in the house and get us all waters? We're hot and thirsty. That would really help us out. And she goes in the house. She tracks mud all over the house when she went into the house because it's muddy outside. And we tell her to watch for snakes because she was good at spotting the snakes while we were cleaning out this ditch. And she goes, snake there. And before long, she gets tired, and we see her over doing cartwheels. And then she's spraying the garden hose and washing herself down and wasting our water. And finally, I'm like, Emery, you work pretty hard out here. I think it's time for you to take a break. Why don't you rest, and we'll finish this work up? I think sometimes God's saying that to us, that we need to rest. We need to trust that he's going to get the work done, probably better than we will get the work done. And so we need to trust God, take his advice, go take that rest, and allow him to continue to work. I'll close with this. We all struggle with Sabbath. That's why you guys are laughing tonight, because you know the struggles that come with resting. It's a deep spiritual problem that we all have. We all still hear that little Pharaoh in our hearts saying, make more bricks, produce more bricks. That's why we need a deeper rest. We need a rest that is beneath the rest. That's what Jesus talks about in Matthew 11. He says, come to me, all you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. God gave the command to rest in Exodus and Deuteronomy. God gave the gift of rest at the beginning of the Bible in Genesis. But because of our sin, even our rest is restless. It's like sleeping and never getting into REM sleep, you know, that deep sleep that you truly need to recover. Jesus offers a deeper rest, a rest that's beneath the rest. And if we can take hold of that rest, that's how our wounds will be healed. That's how we'll gain perspective. That will allow us to examine our hearts. That will allow us to forgive more easily. It'll allow us to be more grateful, to apologize more quickly, become more patient and kind and generous. Don't you want that kind of rest? I know I do. Told you earlier, it was a busy week, and it was mostly all my fault, and my therapist wife essentially told me that. And this is probably, of all my time here, the most hypocritical sermon I've ever given, because I struggle tremendously with rest and with busyness. But I'm working on it. I'm going to keep practicing. So I'm going to end with Hebrews 4. God's promise, verse 1 says, of entering his rest still stands. We know it is ready because of the place in the scriptures where it mentions the seventh day. On the seventh day, God rested from all his work. Jump down to verse 9. So there is a special rest still waiting for the people of God. For all who have entered into God's rest have rested from their labors, just as God did after creating the world. Verse 11. So let us do our best to enter that rest. So I want to do that now. I want to take just a few moments at the end of our time together to rest, to Sabbath, to just sit and be quiet, reflect, pray. So I'm going to ask you again, close your eyes, and I'm not going to ask you to count to 10 this time. I just want you to sit there and rest. If you want to pray, pray. If you want to reflect on your week, do so. Or maybe just sit and let your mind wander. Or maybe tonight, if you've never taken hold of that rest that is beneath the rest, maybe now is your time as you pray, Jesus, I am ready for your rest. Take some time now and Sabbath.